Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming Outlander series or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 30 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So announcements this week. Several Instagram photos, the first of which was what I like to think of as Mrs. Fitz's minions. I'm assuming that's what they are. The, looks like kitchen ladies, if you will. Mm-hmm. All kind of posing at...
Definitely
a pose. Like, looks like a table. So the dinner table? It looks like a dinner table, like a feasting table.
Yeah, it looks like a long... Yeah, the table that they were feasting at.
We also got a new photo from... His name is Steve Kent, who I believe is from Sony. Posted a picture of our three leads with Claire flanked on either side by her two husbands. They all look so normal.
Well, Tobias looks a little sleepy.
He probably is.
She looks happy. Sam looks...
Fresh-faced.
Yeah.
Very fresh-faced.
Pretty much.
We also got an Instagram pic of the archaeological toolkit. There's a bunch of stuff in there. Didn't they first post it kind of hazy so you couldn't see it? And all I saw was the paintbrushes.
Me too.
What I assumed were paintbrushes. And they would work as paintbrushes, but they're
probably the same.
Yeah. Little tools.
Mm-hmm. That's some kind of scraper, but a lot of people, painters use...
That's like a little tiny trowel.
Yeah.
They like to move earth.
Yes, but I'm saying it reminded me of the thing that a painter would use on his palette. That too.
It's true. We got an article this week from Herald Scotland. It's heraldscotland.com. Discussing the possibility of being able to, perhaps in the future, purchase... The Outlander tartan. I think it's been discussed, I think at least by us, about the possibility of it. But yeah. I don't think that we've had anyone put it out there
in
the media.
I know.
Have you seen how expensive kilts are?
Well, they're hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
Hundreds and hundreds would be delightful. Some of them are thousands of dollars. I don't even know the website I looked at, but I was just one day kind of looking at different tartans online and kilts and... Mm-hmm. And they are crazy expensive. They should make a discounted kilt store for those of us who would like to own some tartan, but just seriously can't afford $1,000. We also received lesson 6 in the How to Speak Outlander. This week was not a Scottish word, but it was a word that is prevalent in the book Outlander. The word this week was Rhenish. Which even Diana mentioned, I saw her posting this, mm-hmm. that it was not a Scottish word at all. Mm-hmm. It was, I think she said it was English, which to me, I thought was...
It's an English word to describe a German wine, right? A wine coming from the Rhine region.
Okay, because yes. When I see Rhenish, I thought Rhine, which made me think of Germany.
Yeah, but exactly. And the only thing is, if it's an English word, it's an English word to describe a German wine or a wine from a region in Germany, I just don't understand why they dropped the I. Because Rhein is R-H-E-I-N, but it's all good. But I definitely thought of Rhein.
I mean, I'm sure it's delicious, and that's all that really matters. There was another very interesting article on thetartanweek.com, which if you don't know anything about Tartan Week, stay tuned. Not to this week's episode, but to future episodes. The Kelpies have arrived. Now, if you don't know what the Kelpies are an enormous 30-meter-high...
Structures.
Yeah. Installation, maybe an art installation in Falkirk. They're huge. It looks like two giant horses' heads rising from the ground. Mm-hmm. And they
have water horses.
Yes, that's what Kelpies are, water horses. So these kind of look like if they were not coming out of the ground and they were coming out of the water, it would be water horses.
Oh.
But they have...
That would be amazing if they were coming
what
out
they're
of
calling... I know, right?
That would be amazing.
What they're calling the little brothers of the Kelpies are arriving there at... They've been installed in Bryant Park in New York. And they are significantly smaller, but no less majestic. And they look like they're actually part of a fountain installation. Because they kind of look like... It's hard to tell. They might just be coming out of a thing, but they kind of look wet. But
definitely...
That could just be a reflection of part the light.
I see what you're saying. I don't think they're part of a fountain. I don't think they'd want to get them wet, but they are outdoors and it could rain, so all bets are off if they're outdoors. But it definitely... The metal... I don't know if it's because of the way the small pieces of metal are turned and the glare we see, mm-hmm. but from the one static picture that we see, it definitely looks like it's more shiny in the bottom. That's yeah. all.
But they're significantly smaller than the 30-meter-high kelpies in Falkirk, but they are no less, as I said, majestic. And I'm sure most of you know this. Outlander Stars has come out with their own newsletter that, if you sign up, will go straight to your inbox. This week was the first one. That's right. And it included some behind-the-scenes images that I haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. And just a little bit of information. A lot of it's not new information to those of us that follow the production. Follow
everything.
Right.
On the internet.
Correct. But it's good to know that they're doing this because they're going to, you know, of all the newsletters that are out there currently, this is one that's straight from the horse's mouth.
What other newsletters are out there?
Like news roundups and things like that.
I see.
Anywho, straight from the horse's mouth. If you want it, go sign up for it. It's free. And lastly, we also got one more new picture from Star's Instagram account. This was a pretty hectic week for them. They had a lot of pictures coming out.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was a little more of Claire hair. And I think they titled it, Always Working on That, # Claire hair. Which it must be. I mean, for them to use her real hair must be a chore, if nothing else, because it's out in the elements. They can't have it prepared ahead of time. Like with when you wig an actor, you can work on it. They don't have to be there. You just stick it on your wig head and you can take it with you, have it all, keep it indoors so it doesn't get messed up.
Protect it at all times.
Right. But this one, she wears it home, messes it up and comes back the next day and they have to fix it all over again. And now for the conclusion of our chapter 24 read-along.
Old Alec comes to see Claire in her surgery for his rheumatism. And she massages his hand and then offers him some whiskey, which is the only thing she really can offer for the pain of preparing for the massage.
It helps to relax the muscles and
knock him out.
I think it's really funny because he's like, you know, she's like, well, the first thing we need to do is get you liquored up, basically, is what she's saying. He goes, I knew you were a good doctor.
And she says, drink up and then also strip as far as you're comfortable with doing and get on the table. And then she massages him. And during this massage, we learn more about
Jamie's mom.
Well,
which we don't really know anything about.
No, except like her name, maybe. Mm-hmm. So we learn that Jamie's mother, Ellen, was a free-spirited woman and did not pay heed to Colm or Dougal, her brothers. She was the eldest of the Mackenzie children, older than Colm, and the apple of old Jacob's eye. So apple of her father's eye. She went so long unmarried because her father would not force her into marrying someone that against her will. And when Jacob died, Colm, the new laird, had less patience, and he wanted to use her and to seek an alliance with Monroe to the north or Grant to the south. Jocasta, and I, because I am much further along in the series than this book, I was like, I know Jocasta, because
here's the thing. At this point, she's just a name.
She's a name. You know nothing about
nothing.
Her.
She means nothing.
She comes into one of the later books, and she's her own character. She's a great character.
She's a great character.
She's an awesome character.
But at this point, she's just this young 15-year-old who gets told to marry some guy.
And she goes for it.
That's what you did.
Women were property. Come on.
Yes.
Back then, women were property.
And she had taken John Cameron and gone north.
Just now, even now, women are property in some countries.
No, that's true. I'm comparing to the U.S. Right. I mean, generally speaking, even though things aren't completely equal by any stretch of the imagination,
no.
It's much different than it used to be.
So, agreed. Ellen was unmarried at 22, and she was not cooperative.
And she was considered
a spinster.
A spinster at 22.
And there was a big gathering. There was hope that she would get with Malcolm Grant. Mm-hmm. And there's a big gathering, and there's supposed to be a meeting in the Rose Garden to see if she would... They were going to have a conversation to see if she would... Accept him.
Yeah.
And they waited till after dark, and they waited and they waited, and she never showed, and neither did Malcolm. Grant's men came for the horses and left. And Alec says that Dougal would have seen insult in Grant's stealing away with Ellen, but Colm would have seen opportunity. Because
mm-hmm.
the thing is, if there was an arrangement, or at least an attempted arrangement, and Ellen had
refused. What sometimes happened was that the man would kidnap the woman and probably end up raping her if she wouldn't acquiesce. And then once she's shamed, would be forced into marriage to make things right. And he would end up getting his way.
They wouldn't have to pay her dowry if that too. He stole her.
Exactly.
Which, to call him, that seems like a great deal.
It got rid of her and saved him money. So he would have seen it as an opportunity, even though it would have been a little bit of shame. But it would have been an opportunity, and he would have taken care of things. So Alec warns Claire that Colm is ruthless, and to bear that in mind.
Mm-hmm. Which I think she already knows.
But. Yes. And in the end, Ellen wasn't with the Grants. We learned that, Grant would not say what happened between them, but he'd been so offended that he left immediately. And ultimately, they found a kitchen maid who'd remembered seeing a man in a back passage before supper. He was very tall, handsome, and sturdy, and hair is like a black silkie's, and eyes like a cat. Hello, Jamie's father. Eyes like a cat. He met a woman dressed in black, shrouded in a hooded cloak. And Claire asked what a silkie is in English, and we find out it's a seal. And a folk in the village would tell the tale that Ellen was taken to the sea to live among the seals. And silkies, Jamie tells her, put aside their skins to come on land. To come live
Jamie.
On land.
Jamie, what did
you Oh, sorry, tell Alec.
I always get silkies and water horses. Like, those two horses, those two stories, I always kind of get intermixed.
Yeah.
Well, then you have those two, the big monuments.
Lose their skin and come mm-hmm. on shore and then go and back in the water.
I know.
So they found that there was Brian, but no one knew who he was, and so they called him Brian Du, or Du. Ellen had red hair, eyes of gray, and was a tall woman. And they were found living in a crofter's cottage, and Ellen was quite pregnant. By that time, it's like,
Well, it took them a while to find her. It took a while just to figure out that what she had left and who she left with, and then they didn't even know his last name.
Yes.
And then they're like, so the only reason they found out is like through
at
months
the time,
of kind of keeping
lands were based on, you know, the areas of land, and you can look at it now, the clan maps are all based on last names. And if you don't know a dude's last name, you don't even know where to start.
Yeah. Because everyone has...
It was like a needle in a haystack, and they had to wait for gossip talk to come to them from different
Scotland
places.
Scotland is bigger than you think. Like, I was looking at a map the other day, and I don't even know why I thought about this, but when I went to the UK, we were in London, and we drove up to Scotland, and I remember thinking how ridiculous it was that how long the trip was. I thought it was going to be a much shorter drive from London to Edinburgh, and it took, like, you know, a good 7 hours.
It's like California-ish.
Yeah, it is like California. But that Edinburgh is like in the south. Like there's southwest. Still a significant amount of Scotland to the north. So I think I have a really bad perspective of how large Scotland is. And I was looking at the map the other day and I was like, dang, Scotland's a lot bigger than I thought. Than I think of when I think of Scotland comparatively.
She was 5 months pregnant, and that was the whole point. That to get to the point where
to hide out long enough,
Colm would have to give his blessing.
He was sneaky but smart.
It was sneaky but smart, and he still tried to. Dougal, because Dougal had to go look for them, right? Because
he's the muscle.
Well, he's Colm by this time is already
once he stops eating cookies
gone downhill, right?
Yeah.
Ellen had cut Dougal from shoulder to rib. To keep him from cutting Brian's throat. So we don't know that story yet. We just know that that cut had come from her. Ellen and Brian moved into Lallybroch a week before the child was born. That's a long time between being 5 months pregnant and 9 months pregnant.
Well, they probably had to arrange everything.
A lot of
stuff. And arrange for where they're going to live. They had to find Lallybroch.
They had to talk to Simon, I'm sure. Old Simon.
Oh, I'm like,
and they probably had to involve Ned Gowan. And you know how long he takes to write out papers. And
old Simon... had to give them Lallybroch, but he also had to write up the whole paperwork saying, if you don't have a son, it goes back to me because I want my land back.
All that stuff that Jamie and Claire went through,
all
had
that
written
stuff,
up here.
All that stuff that had to happen before they could officially move into that.
And you have to have negotiations before you can have it written up.
Agreed.
Well, it's still 4 months, though.
But it's a different time. They don't have fax machines. They don't
have horses.
No.
So it took them... For some whatever reason, it took them time.
Yeah.
And they get married. They move into Lallybroch a week before the child is born, and they were married in the dooryard because he wanted to be able to carry his bride across the threshold, and he said he almost ruptured something.
Yeah.
Blame him for making giant babies.
Well, she was a large woman to begin with because she was taller than Claire, and how tall is Claire supposed to be?
Well, 5'6".
Five, six.
In the movie or the book?
in the book.
5'6". So she was probably
120 pounds, 125.
She's probably 5'8", 5'9". Ellen, I bet she was at least
probably 5'9".
I would like to say, which is taller, a very thin woman. 5'6" and 125 pounds is very thin.
But Claire was not fat.
No, she wasn't fat.
Overly curvy.
I'm just saying how
she
crazy.
Had boobs and a booty, but she wasn't
how small she must
overweight.
Have been to have been able to be that heavy mm-hmm. at that height.
Yeah.
Oh, I
is
see.
All I'm saying.
Well, she must have been, I guess you could say curvy, not as in
like
voluptuous.
She must have had like
a small waist, yeah.
A small waist and a big old bottom to be able to have the measurements that she alludes to.
Okay.
Anyway.
So, Mandy writes, Dougal's impetuousness and that Ellen will go far to defend her love. That's what we find out about here.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I think it's good indication of where Jamie gets it from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. He would and does do anything to protect Claire.
Yes.
And Claire, and this is all going on in the conversation or
with Alec.
With Alec. On the table, and Claire, he falls asleep, and Claire leaves him. And I thought, you know what?
She covers him
it
up.
It reminded me of, like, having a massage, and they kind of leave the room.
Yeah.
Not forever, because
yeah.
you do have to leave eventually.
Yeah.
But, like, for, you know, 5 minutes or something, 3 to 5 minutes, they leave you there with the music and the sound,
yeah.
and they cover you up.
Yeah.
I just thought, well, it was a massage, so.
Yeah.
Connie writes, Alec seems to think a lot of Claire, which becomes very important later. And Connie was spot on with your observation about what happens in the next chapter, but we don't want to spoil it.
Mm-hmm.
So just, we're giving you huge props here, girl. This is very important. How
much respect he has and
how much
that
he
plays
likes
into.
Her. How much, exactly, into what happens because he puts himself at risk. Let's just put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
He's not in the best shape. He has a lot of pain. He has rheumatism. But he does something for her. That's all we're going to say.
Heroic, I think.
Very much so. So Claire wants to go and borrow a book from Colin.
Well, I think it's important to state that a lot of people in this time period, and that Leoc, respect Claire in a way. Leoc Dune. Anyway, a lot of people respect Claire in a way that is not common of women of that time. They respected her in some ways like they would respect a man.
A man.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
That's true.
So,
but she's also a woman from a different time who when she would speak her own opinion many times.
Yeah.
The difference was that men would actually listen to her opinion.
Yeah.
That is a very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Well, she's probably mannered very differently than women of the time period. So they're used.
She's not demure.
Women of the time
she's
period
not,
probably do demur to men, and they are very, you know, acquiescent to men. Whereas she's just like, F no, that's a terrible idea. Listen to me, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I'm going to go get us all killed.
Yeah.
Claire.
Claire and her wonderful
oh,
ideas.
Claire.
So Claire wants to go borrow a book from Colm's library, and she makes her way up there. And she notices that there's usually an attendant stationed outside of the second landing, right next to where
this
the
time
door
it was
is.
Lyra.
And it, well, no, there was nobody there.
There was nobody there when she first
so,
came.
I was just saying, she was there.
But
attendant.
She hears voices coming from her office, so she stops, and she hears that from what they say, she can tell it's Colm and Dougal, and Colm is raising his voice at Dougal and saying that he can't believe his behavior, meaning Dougal's. And Colm says how he's glad that maybe there wasn't too much of a bad thing with him getting the brain out of the deal between the two brothers. And this is another famous line from this book of Diana's. If the brothers Mackenzie have but one cock and one brain between the two of them, then I'm glad of my half of the bargain.
Well, because his disease leaves him
cockless.
Well, yeah.
Well, he still has it. It's
just,
not useful.
It's not useful.
Yeah, it's not.
So she decides, she's like, okay, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't go in here. I'll go back downstairs. And she hears skirts rustling below, and she's like, oopsie. And then she hides in the only place she can, which is behind a tapestry, and she knows full well her feet are going to stick out, but there's nothing else she can do. And I'm like, I put in caps. This must be in the freaking series, because it is too comical. It is too classic.
Yeah.
Hollywood.
Yeah.
And it is
it's just
not
funny.
An expensive shot.
No. No.
I don't know. The tapestry could be very expensive.
Well, that's true. It could be an expensive tapestry, but...
Yeah.
But IKEA makes
it. But that makes me laugh.
They could just get one from IKEA.
And then she hears Colm say, the woman's a witch, or the next thing to it. Dougal tries to reply, but Colm says that he's not to worry, and that he'll see that she's done right by. And we hear that Dougal will be away with the Duke and Jamie hunting. Claire peeps out, and sees Leary carrying a tray. She was what she had heard when she had heard a noise, and it was she who had dropped a cup.
Mm-hmm. Well, and she threw the tray she had on the table.
Yes.
And a cup fell off, and she took off running down the stairs.
Colin hears it. Leary drops the tray onto the table and flees. He's like, oh, it's you. Did you bring the stuff that we asked for, basically, to help with his Colin's throat? And she says, yes, here you go. And says, yes, I brought it.
Well, she knew that the sound was going to bring him out, so she jumped out from behind the tapestry and grabbed the cup. And like, that was okay, the only time, I'm the one who brought it. Yeah, yeah, it was
She knew she couldn't make it down.
Yeah.
She gives that to him. She goes inside, and she takes two herbals from his library, takes some books. And while they're there, she sees outside some of the young riders jumping their horses over the stone wall, and all make it over but Cover. Probably this is new for him. Mm-hmm. And... for the horse.
He's a very short, well, little docile horse. He doesn't seem like a
jumper. The thing that makes me go, oh, Hamish, you little stinker. Because Jamie even says, you're not allowed to jump him.
Yeah.
You are only allowed to ride him around the paddock, and if you don't pull on his mouth or anything, then he'll let you ride, but no jumping until I say so. And then what do you know? Next thing, he's off jumping, doing whatever he wants with the boys, and it's like...
poor boy.
And, yeah, and he says the hoof... Yeah, he... the horse jumps, and I think either he misjudges the height or whatever, and he clips his hooves on the front, you know.
And that makes he tumbles. Like, he
said the horse and Hamish like tumbled over the fence and went down, mm-hmm. and the horse was on top of Hamish.
I know.
And to me, I've seen some really bad wrecks, and it's like. There's nothing worse or more terrifying to me than to see a horse and rider go down together. It's just the most horrifying thing to see, because 1,200 pounds of animal, or even like a horse that's only 14 hands, 1,000 pounds of animal going down.
It's a car on you.
Going down and landing on top of you, possibly. It's a terrible thing. And like, the horse could break a leg. You could break your neck. I mean, there's all kinds of things that can go wrong. Hamish is lucky he's a kid, because kids are like made of rubber, and they can just like... bounce back. I mean,
yeah, but horses aren't.
Horses are not. They
don't really say what do they. They don't
the horse
say.
Does get up. Okay. I think it says something about the horse getting up. He gets up. He struggles for a minute because Hamish is underneath him, and that's why they were both standing at the window like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And then Hamish gets up, and he tells his friends to get back, and he goes over the wall and throws up because he like.
I he like to the think though that stone walls of the time were different than stone walls of this time. I think that.
Well, they're the shortish ones.
Well, they are shortish, but I'm thinking more of the way that they're put together. They're I don't think that they're mortared as much as they're stacked rocks. So
well, that's how they would clear a lot of fields, is they go through the fields,
pick the rocks out, and then line the fields with. So
the
I like to think that when the horse hit the wall kind of went down with him.
Which would mean
that he probably made it over and would.
That's how they make jumps in jumping.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They make them so they've
changed a lot of regulations so that the poles knock down really easy with the slightest bump, and even the walls that are an actual looking wall type
like
thing.
Foam, right?
They're like these foam pieces all on top, and they literally can just. fall apart and the horse goes through it.
And that's good for their safety, but also good for the riders. If they don't do a clean jump, they don't get the points.
Yeah.
So it's good on both sides. Yeah. Well, good. It's safer.
Yeah. Oh, way safer.
So Hamish ends up being all right, though, as you said, he vomits and got the wind knocked out of him.
He deserved it.
He totally did.
Crap head.
So, but Colum is relieved, and she says, not that she would think he didn't care for him, but she's really touched by how much he cares for him, and she says, you care for him as though he were your own, don't you? Colum is shocked, and he's alarmed. But his eyes are flaming every time she does that.
Every time she does something like this, I am just like, "Good God, why,
Claire?
You are just feeding into
God.
That's like giving Colum another reason to try to like
have her or Jamie or both of them taken care of."
I remember the first time I read this, I remember thinking, "Oh, well, that's stupid. Can't be good," but. And then when I got to the next chapter, I was like, you stupid so-and-so. I'm like, if you had thought for one second that this might or might not feed into the issues that are coming up to you, you would just shut your mouth and just try to ride under the radar.
I just don't know why she would have said something like that to him. She knows he's a powerful man in a powerful position, and to say something like that could alarm him. She knows he's not going to want something like that getting out. Why would she want to alert him that she knows that? That's one thing I never understood.
And she couldn't possibly profit from it. Like, it doesn't wouldn't help her in any way to admit.
She's not going to buddy up to him. And she's not going to buddy up to him in any way.
And here's the thing. There is no reason that she should know that.
No, I know.
In any way, shape, or form. There's no reason that she should know that. Exactly. So it doesn't help her in any way, shape, or form to make any statement like that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No.
So Mandy writes, Claire lets Colm know she knows that Hamish isn't his. Not good again.
Yeah, not very smart.
And Connie writes, Colm's eyes blaze with alarm in bold.
You think?
Oh my goodness.
And then relaxes a second and he goes, yes. That's all his answer is to her is yes.
Well, what else is he going to say? Is he going to, bare his soul to her and be like, oh my God, I totally had my brother have sex with my wife.
Here he is. He is being afflicted by a disease that nobody even has a name for it yet. His disease.
No one famous enough has had it.
Well, nobody knows what it is. Right. Nobody knows what it does.
It didn't get named until somebody super famous had it. Right?
And so,
Toulouse-Lautrec.
Famous
artist. You can't say some famous artist.
We know the name. I'm saying he was an artist, correct?
Yes.
That was my question.
You can't say some famous artist.
Well, the name doesn't mean anything. It was named
something. It totally means something.
So we learn that Claire takes away from the scene outside the study is that Dougal impregnated Leary.
She assumes that because Leary takes off running and freaks out. And that's what she assumed.
Right.
That's why
she doesn't tell Jamie this. Because she is afraid that even though she believes him that he's not involved with her, he's afraid that his sense of justice and duty and morals and all that, his uncle up.
Yeah.
True, but I think it's interesting that that's the connection that Claire
that she
made.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. So very wrong.
Yeah.
But interesting.
So at dinner, she thinks of Frank, and her inclination, she says, is to shy away of thinking about him. That's why you said she's not thought about him so much or wants to keep it away because it's painful and it means she has to make a decision. The more she thinks about it, she realizes she has to do something. To recognize that she should not be delaying her decision much longer, she tries to think about his face, and it morphs into Jamie's face again. Mm-hmm. And Murta, she describes Murta for us. For the first time, we get a really nice, clear picture of him. He's short, slightly built, but sinewy as a gibbon, she says, with long arms that reinforce the simian resemblance.
Which is a really good
Have
description.
Have you seen The Exile?
The guy, not even that. They
oh, the guy they cast?
Really good,
yes.
Good actor.
Oh,
and I don't think that he generally looks like
but
a
looks
monkey
long
per se.
Not long, but
he does look sinewy.
And he's small.
He's small and he's compact.
He's a very nice,
scruff kind of little guy.
Right, he does look definitely scruffy and a little gruff. He looks like he would be. Because that's like the noise I think of when I think of Murtaugh. Just like. Okay.
He doesn't talk much, so.
No, so he's a man of grunts in my head.
So someone mentioned, they're at the meal, and someone mentions Sandringham, and she's like, oh, ears perk up, let me listen. And Ned says, and this makes me laugh, Ed says, oh, you mean old Willie, the arse bandit.
Yeah. this should be like foreshadowing of what's to come.
Yes.
Of him or?
Just a description of the Duke of Sandringham.
Oh, you're not talking end of
no.
End
no,
of book.
But that, no, that's the first mention we really have of his character. And
the
arse bandit? Yeah, it just kind of comes out and you're like, wait, what?
What does this mean? And we learn that he has a taste for boys.
And by boys, we mean 16-year-olds.
Yes. And Jamie.
Jamie.
Jamie tells of his interactions with the Duke at age 16. The Duke found... Remember, the Duke was visiting while Jamie was living there.
Yeah.
And the Duke found Jamie washing in the river. As we said, they washed in the river. And he wanted to wash his back for him, and Jamie let him. And then he went on with the rest, and Jamie did. But then the Duke reached under his kilts, and Jamie's like, yeah, okay, I don't think
He's
so.
Like, I was naive, but I wasn't stupid.
Exactly.
He's like, I dove into the water and got
and
to the other
the
side.
Exactly.
And I think what's important about this discussion is that we find out that this was one of the real reasons he left.
This comes, it has to do with him.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
So he was then, after this, understandably, he was very wary of being alone with the Duke. And other times when he couldn't get away, he says the furthest the Duke got was kissing his ear.
Yeah.
And one time in the stables, though, in a stall, the Duke had him cornered, and Jamie was like, I just hoped it wouldn't hurt too much. He was totally resigned.
Well, Jamie was like, he was stuck as a kid.
He was stuck in the stall.
And he's a royal Duke.
He was already bent over, like, cleaning out the troughs, right? And so he corners this poor kid, and he says he feels his, like, kilt go up, and he feels something hard against his butt.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, Lord.
He feels something hard against his arse.
Arse is fine.
But you already said it. And so he's,
But that's when he says, he just braced himself, like, I just hoped it wouldn't hurt too much.
He's like, I'm going to think of England.
Yes.
Hopefully, wait. The Duke or Jamie?
No, it's just that term. Like,
Jamie.
No, I've heard it too,
but hopefully he could.
Or think of Scotland.
He'll think of Scotland, but that's not the phrase.
I know. Well, it kind of is the phrase.
It's not the phrase. You don't ever hear that phrase. You think of the Scottish as being like
I have been told. Ruddy. I understand what you're saying. Yes, I understand what you're saying. But take away the content or the context of where that's usually said, do something for a country is not uncommon. I was told when I was in Scotland that I can sleep for Scotland because I slept a lot, okay? So in the stables, he basically thought, he was resigned to it. He's like, I hope it doesn't hurt much.
He knew he couldn't get away.
And the horse in the stall, though, I love it. He didn't like high-pitched voices, and the sound of the Duke's voice freaked him out. He started, like, kicking, and he ended up, like, pinning the Duke against the wall. And Jamie's like, see ya.
He jumped over the trough, over the wall, out the stall. He was like, I'm gone. I'm out of here.
Oh, my goodness. And then the next day, he's like, okay.
He planned to avoid him again.
He did, but then the Duke's like, I'm going to have this dude.
Yeah.
I'm going to have this little boy.
I'm going to have this redheaded 16-year-old, and there's no one that can stop me because I'm the Duke.
So, yes. Exactly. So he tells the Mackenzie that his servant's ill and he'd like to borrow a Jamie to help wash and dress.
Oh, I bet.
Of course he would. Jamie goes to Mrs. Fitz and asks for a dose of syrup and syrup of figs.
What is the syrup of figs? It's Ex-Lax of the time.
Yeah, but what was it? What was the syrup of figs? What was it? Was it actually
I'm assuming it's concentrated figs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm thinking, even though I know it's not a prune, but I'm thinking of something like...
Like prune juice?
Prune juice.
Yeah.
But concentrated.
But made of figs, yeah.
Interesting.
Like something that you would use for...
I mean, from the reading, I knew what it did. I was just curious if it was really like a syrup of figs. Like,
yeah, probably a concentrated boiled down with a lot of... the fruit sugar would have been sweet, too. Yeah. But remember, they said that when Claire first gets to Leek, she says that, oh, well, it'll be good to have a real healer here. First of all, Mr. What's-His-Name, who died, was gone.
The beaten.
But... Also, Mrs. Fitz would help people out with small things, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she had leeches.
Obviously, Mrs. Fitz was a much better healer than Mr. Beaton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
but they did admit that they had a really bad Beaton.
That's true.
Because Beatons were known.
They were known
to
good healers.
He was just a bad Beaton.
He was a bad one.
So he goes to Mrs. Fitz and asks for a dope of syrup of figs and
a dose.
Did I say
you
dope?
You said dope.
Wow. And my wine is long gone. Asks for a dose of syrup of figs. And he takes it, but then he also watches where she puts the bottle,
and he goes back
and he drinks the whole thing.
Oh, gosh, that makes me sick thinking about how sick he would be.
But it makes me laugh my booty off, because he goes back, and then he had to go see, well, he had to go
take care of the Duke.
Meet the Duke, and then when...
That's not code for anything, is it?
No.
Well,
I gotta go take care of the Duke.
And the Duke, and then he says, basically, the Duke didn't mind him... leaving. The Duke excused him.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he
when
was
he had the,
quite
he
fraudulent.
Grossed him out.
I'm sure it was pretty bad.
Nobody wants to...
Well, and he said... But he said...
He had the run.
He excused himself once, and then he said he knew he wouldn't be able to excuse himself a second time.
Oh.
So he stole to the stables, took a horse, and booked it home. And then he says, but I had to stop every 10 minutes to take a dump, because it was just... You know, your innards are coming out.
So Jamie makes it back to...
They should
sell
Lallybrook. Yes. Figs. I would buy some.
Jamie and old Alec come to get Claire the next day in her surgery to ask for her to assist. And this is about to showcase our horsewoman. To ask for her to assist with a horse birthing. They want her because of her... Well, maybe arm length,
small
but definitely small arms
small.
And span. Thinner
and
arms.
And it does... I'll say, with helping any large animal give birth... Having skinny arms and small enough hands is, it really is helpful.
Well, kind of having thick, beefy hands and thick, beefy arms is not good, not even just with large animals, but with humans. With humans, like, you would not want a large armed hand OBGYN turning your baby while you were in the middle of giving birth. Like, if you had a breech baby and they needed to reach inside and turn your baby around, you would be like, who has the smallest hands in this room?
Yeah.
The tiniest, tiniest
nowadays,
baby arms.
Nowadays, they don't even really try to manually turn babies anymore. It's just, they, I mean, they offered to do that with me, with Amelia, because she was breech, but they, right. they pretty much hope that you just say, no, let's just do C-section, because it's it can rupture things when you turn them manually. And
they even try sometimes to do it externally like
that's
that.
That's what I mean. Whoa, they manually, that's how you manually turn them, and it's painful.
Well, it makes me think of, like, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Have you guys seen that movie?
Yes. I have, but not for ages.
So Little John's wife is giving birth, and Morgan Freeman is like, the baby is breech, I must turn it. And, like, you don't see anything, but he's like, it's Morgan Freeman. He's not a tiny man, and I can't imagine anyone reaching up inside of anything and turning a baby to turn it around.
There isn't, I mean, with humans, you don't, I mean, you can reach inside a
bit.
With
one hand,
with
maybe.
One hand, maybe. But mostly,
I mean,
it's manually, it's from the outside. With horses
painful.
And cattle, it's, you have to go through the inside. And you get your arm
up to
their shoulder. And
well, look at the structure of an animal. Most animals are, they're quadrupeds. So they're on all fours. So their back's from the front. And their hips are open. You're not going to get a horse to lay on their back so that you can, you know, access their stomach. You have to go in from the inside. You don't have that option.
Most horses, like, if they're having trouble birthing, a lot of them will, they want to get down and kind of roll around and lay on one side and then lay on the other, even roll around a bit to try to move things around. Mm-hmm. It's the same as when they get colicky. They want to try it. They know what they should be doing to try to, for the most part.
So why do we interact? Why don't we just
because,
do it?
Because it's a really high fatality rate when there's a breech foal. There's about 1 in 500, I think, is the statistic of foals that are breech. It's only 1 in 500 horses that are breech.
Okay.
And the survival rates of a breech horse are significantly lower from a breech foal. I mean, not only is there the risk of the foal dying or getting, what is it? I forget what it's called. Basically, when they cut off, the umbilical cord gets pinched and it cuts off the oxygen and the blood supply. So you end up with either a foal that's either brain dead or just completely dead.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really dangerous. And in fact, to be honest, from hearing her description of how the foal was, because she says when she reached in, she didn't feel hooves at all, which is what you expect to feel when you reach into a horse. You should feel hooves right away.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, like, the head can be turned back away from its...
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the shoulder gets stuck, and then you have to turn the head towards, you know, towards the feet, basically, and towards the birth canal. But the way she describes it is that she felt like a rump, and then she could reach up further and felt the head was, so that basically the foal was, the body was facing the wrong direction, it was completely breech, and then the neck was folded back on itself, so the head was facing the correct direction.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's really, I find it hard to believe that she could even...
That this could happen.
That this could not only not... It's not that it couldn't happen.
Yeah.
That she could have turned a foal in that position. Because it would have been extremely, extremely difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And for somebody who's had no experience with it at all, I mean, it would have been like... I mean, when you find out a horse is breech, if you... It's literally, it needs to happen. It needs to get out of there quick.
Do they use cesareans with horses or not much?
They do...
Yeah.
But it's really expensive, and it's, you know, and there's a higher chance of infection.
But think about it, how hard that would be to happen, because...
Well, you have to knock a large horse out.
Well, you do have to, but that's not something you can really do on site. I mean,
I don't know if they do it on site or not. I would assume not. Usually, I think as far as I know, you rush them to whatever vet is closest to do it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you couldn't do it at your location, and by the time you got the horse to the location to do the cesarean, you probably are running out of time.
You are. And by then, you're just trying to get the dead foal out that you can save
the mare.
Because within hours, like, it starts, because of the body heat, the foal will actually start, like, rotting. Inside of the mare. And then you get all these toxins inside. And that's why it's important to find out if the horse, I mean, the labor pains can last for hours and hours and hours.
Mm-hmm.
But once they start actually pushing, you can see them pushing and nothing is happening within like a half an hour, you need to check and see what's wrong. Because if nothing's happening within like 20 minutes, half an hour, you need to see what's wrong. And if something's wrong, you need to do something about it quick. because they can only take the stress of it for so long. And if that foal can't come out,
and yet they let humans go for days.
Yeah. Well, they can. The thing is, they monitor. You can monitor humans, whereas in a stall, like there are certain monitors they can use to hook up to,
to so horses and things. It's so expensive, but it's so unwieldy. And
it is. It's really difficult, and it's a large animal. If the horse were to freak out, could get hurt. And not only that, she says that the horse is laying on its side, which when you're trying to maneuver a foal, way harder. It's not that. It's not so much being kicked. I mean, there is the
no, but if they're laying on their side, you if have they're laying gravity on their side, against
if
you
gravity's working against you and trying to turn a foal, it's actually much easier to turn them when they're standing up because the foal drops back down into the belly of the mare, and then you have more room to maneuver things around. That's why this whole section is kind of suspicious to me that she could even possibly have turned this foal and helped.
Though they have said that Claire's a little bit magical.
But she is a healer, and I'll give her that, and I'll just, like, maybe she wasn't feeling things the way she thought she was. I'll give her that, because she doesn't know the anatomy of a horse.
Yeah. Well,
and she doesn't know, really, like, where everything's supposed to be inside with a foal.
Standing up a horse, you would almost have 360 degrees of mobility. Whereas if they're laying down, you've lost an entire
the weight of the foal on the side of the mare.
It's working against you.
Yeah, it's totally working against you. It's always better if you can to stand the horse up and maneuver them if you can, because like laying down, then you'd have to you can get tie ropes to the legs
of the horse.
I've seen
chains.
Well, that's for calf pulling.
Oh, that's a calf.
Calves, you can't.
I've seen chains too, but that was not in a foal.
They do use chains, but you have to loop them in a specific way because if you don't, you have to loop them in a certain way to give yourself the leverage without breaking off the feet
and damaging.
Because you can literally pull their hooves off if you're not careful. So, and calf pulling, there's an actual pull, like a little ratchet you can actually hook with the chains and put this thing clamp against the hind end of it and then ratchet
it's like a gentle pressure
and that way they can pull the calf out without it sucking because you can with the contractions they push out and then they kind of go back in and then they push out a little further and then they can kind of go back in and so with the calf pulling it's the same idea with horses I've heard them wrap like a soft rope around the legs of the foal and have somebody pulling slowly and keeping pressure so the foal can't drop back into the belly.
Okay.
And that way the next push pushes them further out rather than going back and forth, back and forth.
Mm-hmm. You work in the same three inches. As
yeah, and so so that's another thing that I know people do. Anyway, so yeah, it is amazing. I mean, the feat that Claire pulls off, it is amazing, and which horse people would understand, but don't think anybody else would understand. And I've gone long enough about that.
It's okay. No, it's very interesting. And so Claire ends up Claire helps turn the
Okay, wait, just one second. Have any of you guys seen Cheech and Chong's
Big Adventure?
Yeah. Where he's grooming a horse
and he
pulls his arm out and it's just like covered in foam.
Or jelly.
That's what I envision Claire to be covered in. Thanks, Cheech and Chong.
Well, she does soak up with tallow.
But in the movie, the foam is from the inside.
And he loses the rest
of the horse. He has to go back in. I just imagine that anyone who helps out with some sort of a horse birth is covered in foam from shoulder.
No, it's more slimy and bloody than anything else.
Yeah. And that's what I thought is because
it's bodily fluids.
It's birth fluid, so it's going to be all. So Claire, before she does all of this, she puts on breeches and a rough smock and lathers her hand up to the shoulder with greasy tallow soap. And I thought, as a matter of fact, the way I greeted Lynnae this evening was, hey, did you bring your greasy tallow soap?
Nope. I didn't even bring, my vet gloves that go up to your shoulder.
Your armpits.
Yeah.
Yeah, your shoulders. So Claire helps, as we said, Claire helps reposition the foal in the uterus and birth canal, and then it's birthed.
And
all
everybody's
are overjoyed.
Everybody's alive.
And Claire gives Jamie another anatomy. After that scene.
No, and it's important to note too that she's so stiff from working.
Oh yeah.
And Alec comes right up right away and starts massaging your shoulders and she's all cramped up and her arms all cramped up and she's like, I know I'm gonna have bruises all over my arm from this and it was hard work.
Oh, and
dirty hard work.
And it was, even though
foamy
it was just one
work.
Scene.
Not foamy.
Even though it was just one scene, even reading about it, and it wasn't boring at all, but even reading about it, it went on for a little bit. You could tell, you were able to understand Diana, the length of this.
And she just, you know, she's so good at painting the scene.
Yes.
And by the time you're done reading the scene, you feel a little like dirty and sweaty, yes, and grimy and gritty. And sore. Like, oh.
Yeah.
What did we just all go through?
It's true, but...
yeah.
As a woman who's had a baby, that's really how you feel that at the end of it. You feel like, well, you've Claire done this miraculous
says, and Claire even says, I felt like I gave birth after right. that. Yeah.
No, I mean, so. You feel like you've created this, you've had this miraculous feat happen and you were present for it, but at the same time, all you want is like the longest, hottest shower you've ever had in your
and
life.
Poor Claire had no hot bath.
No.
No hot, and no, yeah. So then back in privacy, they do their stuff and Claire gives Jamie another anatomy lesson. She's naming little different veins and body parts, and I just put a smile. That just always makes me giggle. He's like, I never
hearing
thought it
the
would
Latin
be so nice.
Yeah.
And then scene change goes to Claire's in her surgery, and she's just sitting there. Like, and I also said this to Lene and Summer earlier. I said, how did I every... I just did another reread this summer. How did I miss that Claire was... For whatever reason.
We know the reason.
No, I'm saying for whatever reason, she was basically fondling herself.
There's no whatever
in the
reason.
Open.
Seems
I'm
pretty clear.
Whatever. And Galus comes in. And, again, which is, again, you're right. Who better, I mean, either her or Jamie are the best people to see her, right? But my point is, I didn't, I don't remember that.
I remember. But
how
however.
That, how did I miss that?
I mean, she wasn't like.
She wasn't naked. She was totally
close.
As far as we're concerned, I mean, it was barely a fondling. I mean, yeah, it would probably be weird to walk in. I mean, if I was in my office and I walked into somebody's office
and they were touching their
and
boobies.
They were touching their boobies, I'd be kind of like, whoa.
And maybe I need to walk out again.
I'll come back.
I'll give you a
minute. But in the context.
Wasn't she inching?
It doesn't matter. I mean, that would be even weirder to walk in on.
That's what I'm saying.
However, my point is it would be weird regardless, but it's not the same as, like, if she'd had, like, her skirts up, like, on her, like...
No.
On the surgery table, winking at someone.
You know this is going to be that word of the show. Oh, the title has to have the word wink. It has to. It has to. Or at least the tag. Okay,
just
so...
Just call it wink, wink.
No. Wink, wink, nod, nod.
Wink, just say no more.
There
no
you
more.
Go.
So, Mandy, we love your comment. Mandy writes... Claire gets caught remembering by Galus.
Yeah.
Galus, so that was great. So Galus invites her to go for a walk to look for moss while she's in the surgery. She's
Galus
finds the ill wish and asks her about it and says that she has a way to help her find out who gave it to her. And she should come by your house tomorrow morning.
Which is stupid, because Galus is... I'm just saying. It's so frustrating that we all know on some level that she had something to do with it. And for her to be like, I don't know what that is. Come by later and we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Anger.
So, on their walk, looking for moss, Claire hears what she thinks is a wailing sound, a crying baby, and...
That's exactly what she heard.
Lo and behold, it's a crying baby. And she goes...
On
a hill. She goes up to it. She goes to climb up to it, and Claire had picked up the baby. And Galus is like, she takes it from her and puts it back down. She's like,
are you
out of your mind? And Claire is having a crisis as a human being, yes, as the 20th century, but as a healer especially. She's like, she is trained, it is in her soul, to not help someone. If they're ill. And the baby looks ill. It's not just out there, it's ill.
The baby is
really
ill. And that's why
she makes a point. She comments in her mind, like, she can't believe the child had enough
strength
to
cry. Exactly.
So sick and weak and limp in her hands.
And Galus says, wow, I think we pronounced this about four different ways, so
yeah.
I'll have to look it up.
Forgive us.
Galus says that the parents left it there and that it's a changeling. And she explains, when the fairies steal a human child away, they leave one of their own in its place. It will cry and fuss and won't thrive or grow. And that's what the people will call a changeling. So they believe that if they leave the child in a fairy's hill or something, that the fairies will come claim their own and
leave
the human child.
The human child, give them back their human child.
She says that she doesn't believe in that nonsense, and Galus looks at her suspiciously. Don't forget that, folks.
Foreshadowing.
Yep. Galus ends up pushing Claire. They're walking away now. They're pretty far away. And Galus ends up pushing her down into the stream because she's about to try and go back.
Well, Claire says, I don't think it'll live through the night. And she goes, Galus says, I know it's not going to. It's, you know, and then Claire goes, well, I got to go get it then.
Yep.
and they're pretty a little further away.
Yeah.
And she's like, I think I can make my way back. But she gets pushed into the water by Galus, and she calls Claire pig-headed. And this is, again, this is not a new thing. Mm-hmm. Claire's called a lot of things like this by a lot of people, even people who love her. And she tells Claire that if she's seen near the child and it dies, she'll be blamed for it. She says, don't you know what they say about you in the village? And then Galus throws up her arms, whatever, and leaves her. Claire's making her way back to the child, and while she's there, she's freaking out. She's not believing the supernatural stuff, but she says it is freaky. And then she freaks out when Jamie, you know, basically grabs her. And yeah. Jamie's come after her. He says that Galus had found him on her way back to the castle and spoken to him and says, you know, go get her. Or yeah. told her, and he's like, I'll get her. And, / the Duke has arrived. So, not just to save her from doing this stupid thing, but also that they have to get back to the castle.
Mm-hmm.
So, Connie shares Claire's surprise to discover that she likes the high-talking man.
I'm sorry.
Excuse me. Want to leave that in?
That was a sneeze, by the way.
Oh, sorry. That
and I'm surprised there was only one.
That's true. It's usually like in quadruple.
Ooh, I held the other ones in.
Oh, well, that's not good for you.
She's going to explode in about 10 minutes in a poof of hair.
So Connie shares that Claire's surprised to discover that she likes the high-talking man, even though the Duke makes a pass at Jamie. And I know we haven't talked about it yet. This is a little bit out of order, but you guys said a little bit earlier, and I said, wait. But I can't wait to see what Simon Callow does for the Duke.
Well, he's so good.
He's ridiculous. So the Duke goes to bed the first night. He's very tired from his travel. He talks about his travel, how much trouble they had.
He's very tired from the travel.
Yes, thank you. And he does talk about all the great game in the area.
So much game.
Summer, you saw that right now.
I can't.
Please. The following morning, Claire goes into the village with Dougal to see Galus.
Let's go on a stag hunt.
Galus leads her to her private room at the top of the stairs. The description of her room is exquisite. I hope they do well by it. I have great hopes. Claire, she describes a lot of things, but she is taken by this one book that she pulls out and opens up, and it is bound in fish skin and handwritten with French and Latin. She notices it's called Le Grimoire de le Comte Saint-Germain. The Grimoire of the Comte Saint-Germain. And she connects the word grimoire, and rightly so, with magic. Mm-hmm. And she asks Galus if she really is a witch. And Galus plans, and she basically looks at her and says, a white witch. I only white magic.
Yeah. You know, I've read this book a lot of times, and I've never put all this together. Books, that's what I was going to say.
Saint-Germain.
The Comte de Chimane. Yeah. Until, like, right now when you were reading that aloud, I've never...
Connected that?
Connected those
two
things. No, and I don't know why. It's probably because I'm a speed reader.
Yeah.
So I read for, like, I skim and I read for content as opposed to specifics. So I've read everything and I know the story, like, backwards and forwards, but that little tidbit, for whatever reason, totally slipped through the cracks.
I've seen people online discuss it, like, oh, did you catch when you read it, like, after the first time you read it and read all the other books, if you've gone back to read it again, did you catch that?
Yeah.
The grimoire in her,
yeah,
in her room.
Nope. I did not.
I did.
No, I didn't.
So observant.
Galus then plans her summoning to help, quote-unquote, help Claire. And she pours water into a pan in the middle of the quilt on the floor.
She does help Claire, but not for this instance.
Not for this, it's true. Burns herbs on charcoal, and something in the herbal mixture she was burning was affecting Claire. Slowed her breathing down, relaxed her, definitely was like a depressant.
It was a drug of some sort.
Yes, definitely a drug. And Claire feels that she is definitely under the influence of something, and she it's funny, she says that Galus is asking her questions. Galus is talking to her,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't sound like English, but it doesn't not sound like English. She's like, mm-hmm. she's, and then one word, she finally realized she was actually understanding it, but one word came to her mind was opium. Mm-hmm. She's like, you know, so her medicinal knowledge came through. And then Galus begins her questioning. Who sent you here? Why did you come? Why can't you tell me? And this is interrupted by the procurator fiscal, her husband. He didn't come in, but he knocked on the door, pounded the door, and basically he reminds Galus that she's not yet dressed for their outing. And she opens the windows blows the candles out, opens the windows to get fresh air in, and tells Claire, look, you might be tired, you know, overcome. Why don't you come lie down on my bed and rest while I dress? Mm-hmm. So they go to her room. She dresses, in her closet or her dressing area. And while she's in there, her husband bounds into the room, goes into her dressing area, and
Claire hears her scream.
And then she screams. And Claire hears the scream. Her husband, a few seconds later, leaves the dressing area and then leaves the room, totally like,
why is the sheet?
Eyes bulging. Well,
Claire rushes to him because she sees his eyes and his bloodless face. And she's like, are you all right? And he goes, yes, I'm fine. And then he walks out. He didn't know what, and she was just clueless as to what could have happened.
Exactly.
Kind of thing.
And she goes downstairs and realized that Jamie was part of the party Jamie had arrived and they were to go back to take them up for a banquet for the Duke. And once they get there, Colm remarks that he has heard that she helped birth the foal. He heard from old Alex. And he says jokingly that she would be called on to raise the dead before long. And this is probably not meant this way by him. Mm. Meant as a joke, definitely. Yeah. But if it was heard by a certain person in that room, it was just a little bit ironic, mm-hmm. and another dangerous thing to say in that company.
Well, the whole thing with Gillis asking her, don't you know what the people say about you in the village? It's all very foreshadowing about what's to come.
But why would she know what people call her in the village?
She's not down
there. She doesn't go to the village.
And no one tells her.
But I know,
and
nobody tells her.
And she doesn't really pay attention to court politics.
But people already talk about Gillis like she's a witch and she's hanging out with her all the time.
Exactly.
I mean, you associate with that kind of thing and people are going to assume you're one too.
It's
in
true,
that day and age.
But Claire comes from a time period where you're like, well, people talk bad about people all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's usually just rumors and folklore and who cares about all of that. Whereas
In this time
period, it's important.
It means everything.
Your reputation is everything.
Jamie,
what people think about you.
It comes... I don't know if I... It comes up later. So, at this remark, most people within hearing distance chuckled, but one or two of them looked kind of interested or...
They turned to Father Bane.
Curiously at Father Bane at the comment. So as a sign of his gratitude, Colm presents Claire with a beautiful rosary of jet with a crucifix inlaid in silver. And she's like...
Oh. Don't forget about this.
Well, yeah, don't forget about this gift.
She's like, oh, thank you so much. I don't know what to do with this, but...
Exactly. And then she's like, here, Jamie, put it in your man purse.
But it makes me wonder, going back and, you know, having read the book several times,
mm-hmm.
wonder if Colm hadn't thought of that. The reason he gave it to her, of that being a possibility, because that's such a random present to give somebody. I'm going to give you a rosary made of jet.
Yeah.
First of all, who even has a rosary made of
Colm?
Obviously, Colm does, but I mean, in general, that's a random.
But I mean, that is a random gift to give somebody, and maybe he was trying to dispel rumors.
Okay,
for her,
I see
by
what you're
giving
saying.
That to
right.
her.
A gift of a rosary, yes.
Well, yes,
okay,
but if
sure,
she was seen walking around wearing it,
it
you know, they
help.
Would know, blah, blah,
yeah.
blah, foreshadowing,
Maybe he was trying to help her in some way.
Yeah.
And again, we find out later that what happened was never his intention. He just kind of went with it because it was convenient.
Opportunist. What happened with Ellen? He thought she may be taken. He's like, I'm going to go with it.
Yeah, he's an opportunist.
He is an opportunist.
Yes. Yeah,
but he has
If it benefits him.
Right, but that's kind of where he has to be with everything, unfortunately.
Yeah. So when, a side comment from me, I said, when did women become the holders of everything? Obviously when they become mothers, but at least today.
When men's sporrans got too full.
There you go. Because I like that, I wrote down, mm-hmm. I like that Jamie holds all her shiz. Like, oh, thank you. Here, Jamie, hold that. I mean, I love it.
He's got a man purse.
He's got it. I said that.
Women didn't carry purses back then, I guess.
No, did they have pockets?
Yeah, I think most of them had pockets. I remember Mrs. Fitz always had pockets full of stuff.
Yes. And then I wrote, all hail breaks loose.
Hail?
Yeah.
How did you spell that?
H-A-Y-A-L. Hail. A crash of the table. Arthur Duncan is choking. Claire tries to help, but to no avail. Long story short, and it is, she does a lot of things, he dies. She notes that he has spittle that is not consistent with someone who's
choking,
dying of choking, or choking only.
Mm-hmm.
Father Bane glared at her and then gave the last rites to Duncan. Because he watched this whole thing, everything she tried to do, the flapping of the arms, the mouth-to-mouth, everything. And
I like that Diana stays consistent with the time that she, because CPR is completely different than it was back then.
Yes.
And they had them like lying face, like I think face down and flat, like lifting their arms up and down.
Yeah.
Like this, I think.
Yeah.
And
because usually, here's the thing, for the most part, CPR at the time wasn't used for the reason that it was. It was mostly used for people that were like drowning and they were trying to pump the water out. So that was a completely different motion. Like they wouldn't, heart attacks were not seen the way that they are now.
No.
So they wouldn't automatically assume, let's pump their heart and see if we can get it moving again. For the most part, it was something like that they were drowning, like they were trying to like push the water out of their system.
So she also notes that her face felt oddly numb. And again, she had given him mouth to mouth. So she had touched his mouth with hers and gotten some of whatever residue was there.
Mm-hmm.
Or spittle, whatever. So Claire is not... Okay, next day or soon after, Claire is not looking forward to Jamie leaving, who's going on that hunting trip with the Duke. And she thinks about all the ways she enjoys being with him. All the ways.
Mm-hmm.
And before he leaves, he warns her, again, stay away from Galus. And the next day... Jamie is gone. Now, this is what you're talking about earlier. It's like, boom, two weeks to go by.
2 weeks are gone.
And Leary, yes, and she's out walking around the castle, and she runs into Leary. Or probably not runs into her. Leary actually has a message
seeks
for her.
Seeks her out. Yeah. She seeks her out.
The little witch.
Mm-hmm.
Ha ha. Sorry, bad choice of words. So she tells Claire that she had a message for her. Galus had sent word that she was ill and wanted to be tended by Claire. So Claire goes right away. Period. However,
she even says the combination of boredom.
Yes, that's true.
And the combination of boredom and what did she say? And of her instinct of wanting to go help a friend or help somebody in need were enough to get her out of the castle.
It's true, but when you think about it, who would ever send Lyra to give that kind of a message? She doesn't seem like the trustworthy type who I would be like, I trust you to take a very important message to someone else who's very important that can help me. I would never pick her.
No. I know, and Claire doesn't find it suspect that, like, how do you say, Leary?
Well, here's the thing.
That Leary hasn't, like, talked to her or even looked at her since they got back to the castle as a married couple. I mean, nothing but, like, daggers has been sent her way.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, Leary comes running up to her, nothing but sweetness and
your
light.
Your friend called you and wants you to help.
And your friend needs you. And she didn't, like, find that suspect at all. So,
you know. But Claire goes right away.
It's true, but she does go right away, but she just automatically...
Let me go grab my bag that I've had packed just for this occasion.
Right. Obviously, I think boredom is the biggest key in this. Boredom and the fact that she mentions it's Galus.
Yeah.
But... to take anything that Lyra says at face value, just without even questioning it, is remarkable to me. Because she knows, like, she absolutely, without a fact, knows that she is married to someone that Lyra was very interested in.
Yeah.
And scorned women are one thing. Scorned girls...
Teenage girls, oh.
...are a whole nother animal.
Hello, Heathers.
Yeah.
Heathers.
Okay, so
she goes down to see her. She notes that the house seems abandoned. There were no maids there. Almost everything was really disordered. She finds Galus sitting in her cups. She had been drinking a lot. And
she even says, all the maids and everybody have left, and there's
plenty
to
drink.
But there's plenty to drink.
Claire asks her if she's ill, and we find out that she isn't.
And then all of a sudden,
it hits her, like...
It hits both of them, because she says, wait, somebody sent for me, and they said you were ill, and she says, no, I'm not ill. And they both get this look on their face, like, oh, crud, what's about to happen?
And then as soon as that hits them, they hear the rabble.
They hear the noise outside, and they know exactly what it is.
Because they had heard it from the same room before.
Because that's how a well-written scene is written.
Well, that's the noise of a mob coming to get them.
And the last time they heard it was when the mob was going up for the boy.
Yeah, to take him to the stocks.
And Connie writes the most perfect words, and we can do them on sound since we're an audio medium.
Dun, dun, dun.
And thus ends our chapter 24 reading.
Oh, my finally.
God. Are you all...
God.
Are you with us still? Hello?
Oh, my gosh.
Holy.
Sibilance. I mean, goodness. I want to check the time.
I know we rambled a bit. I acknowledge that fact.
2 hours.
So I was going to say that about wraps up, but that took 2 weeks to finish. So we'd like to thank you for sticking with us through this chapter 24 read along that ended up being a two-weeker. But again, we'd like to thank Lene for joining us. So it's always nice to have a third person and a third point of view. I find that it makes us much more talkative.
Oh, and not just talkative, but ramble, specifically, but specifically for this chapter, which was nice to have you here for the horse stuff anyway. But we learned some
things you thought you would never, ever learn.
And things you may or may not Google, happy listeners.
Oh, for the record, you might not want to wink. You might not want to Google winking. Horse winking.
Mare wink.
Mare winking. You know what that sounds like? What you find.
Mare wink sounds a little bit like, well, not really, but merkin.
No, it doesn't.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Except they both have a cut and a ma and a na.
There are other words that have all of those things in it.
Okay, but anyway.
And back to rambling. Anyway.
This is why it took two weeks.
We'd like to thank Lene for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And remember, don't forget, same thing, whatever, at Nehruzu on Twitter.
She won't not bite. Exciting to follow.
She's cool, and she won't bite.
She is fun to follow, but not on Twitter, just around Blake Town.
Especially around a horse. Oh my goodness.
Okay, so, at some point, you should read chapter 25, because we will get around to covering that. I don't know how many weeks from now that will be. But, chapter 25, Thou Shalt Not Suffer a Witch to Live. That should give you a little bit of a foreshadowing of what is about to occur, and you should know that this is one of Ginger's favorites.
I was just about to say, thank you so
favorite.
Much
favorite. Ginger, it's all you talk about. Why would anyone not know that?
They may not listen, but okay. But it's not my favorite chapter. The whole thing is, I would put it as a sequence.
I would say a sequence.
And okay, it's not necessarily my favorite of what happens, because that's, you know, it's sad, freaky, whatever. It moves so fast. I mean, yes. I can only, it's just so exciting to me. It's the thing I'm looking most forward to seeing on film.
All right, so join us back, and she can go into that further.
No, it's okay. I won't until probably, the next time.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, you guys, for listening, for making it this far. We're so excited to have had Lene here, and we look forward to our next episode.
Finally.
Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/OutlanderPod. Or email us at OutlanderPod@gmail.com. I dreamt it last night.